Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
And welcome to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at winbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Dr. Carlos Alvarado, and if you have any questions, comments, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, what's up today?
No, but I'm staring at your desk or across your desk, and I see a couple of articles there. One caught my eye because it was about Elon Musk, who is, you know, the entrepreneur and maker of Tesla and a brilliant guy. And I just skimmed over the article, but in the article he said that, you know, he runs also the SpaceX explorations.
And he's the CEO of Tesla Motors.
Yeah, so he thinks that we'll be able to land on Mars within the next 10 years. And he made a comment there that he'd like to die on Mars.
Right. Well, he said, if you have to choose a place to die, Mars is probably not a bad choice. That's a direct quote.
Right. But it's kind of an odd quote, you know, because the way I look at it, what difference does it make where you die? I mean, you can travel any place you want by thought, you know. So the physical place that you die is really meaningless.
What do you mean, so post-death, you can travel any place that you want?
Yeah. And there's... And it's interesting, there's a guy that does, you know, space exploration, you know, travel exploration, and he's kind of not, maybe he's not even aware of some of the things that the evidence points to. But the what's interesting is that, and when we talk to our guest later today, Dr. Alvarado, and we discuss some of the mediums of yesteryear, I remember reading a bunch of accounts from mediums 100 years ago, where their guides were talking about travel to other planets, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not as far-fetched as we might think.
Or it's been happening all along, and we just happen to be in the wrong dimension.
Yeah, he also posited a theory that life is just a big virtual reality.
Yeah, they asked him the three most interesting things. The one which you've already covered, humans will arrive on Mars by 2025. And two is, life is like a video game played by a more advanced civilization. And he talks about, some of our listeners will remember 40 years ago, Pong first came onto the scene as the very first video game. And it was intriguing to be able to play on a screen, a video game. And it's evolved so quickly in these 40 years that he says, and here's another quote, if you assume any rate of improvement at all, then games will become indistinguishable from reality.
Right. Well, he's suggesting that maybe we're all, you know, avatars and you know, that another civilization is just manipulating us. The same way that we would manipulate avatars in a video game, which we're mere pawns, you know.
Right, and he goes further. His number three is that artificial intelligence can turn us into basically house cats, where we're going to be under the rule of artificial intelligence. And he's also come up with a way to reprogram our minds so that that doesn't happen.
I'm really intrigued by this, the virtual reality technology. I they have all sorts of things that are out already, and you can experience things that you'd never be able to in real life, you know. And I'm sure it's only a matter of time before somebody comes up with an afterlife virtual reality program, so you'll experience what it's like there. But you have another article there about tarot cards.
Yeah, this is quite interesting. There is a woman, Jane Braden. She's about 50. Well, she's 56 years old. And in her shop in Brighton, this is an article from the UK, a gentleman came in, and apparently you can have a 15-minute tarot card reading, or you can have a double, as they say, like, hit me twice. And this guy came in almost in a panic mode. I want a double, like he was, and she immediately started reading them, dealt the first 10 cards, and the first three of the 10 cards was the Death card, the Justice card, and the Devil card. So she knew right away something was up, and she started to question him, and he broke down, and she started to talk to him. This is a quote. "Look, I can see here that this is not good. You need to tell me everything. Let's talk." So now she took the role of the psychologist. You know, okay, so you have bad tarot cards, let's chit-chat. And he basically confessed then to murdering his roommate. And, you know, anybody else, I think, in that situation would have panicked, but she was pretty calm. She kept talking to him, and then she said to him that she would have to call the police and asked him, "Is that okay with you if I do this?" Apparently he agreed. She called the equivalent of what we have in the United States, 911, which I believe there is 999, they did not take her seriously. On the phone, they told her that they did, but they made her wait an hour before they actually sent somebody over because they didn't think it was a real situation. Right. But then they came in and they
were... And it turned out to be true.
And she felt so connected to him and so responsible for the situation that she stayed with him through the arrest. She negotiated with the police not to put him in handcuffs, to take him, you know, away as an average person. And so she's a very, very loving lady, apparently. And
so what do you think motivated him to confess him? Did he take tarot, you know, that seriously, where he was just looking for an excuse to tell somebody?
Well, first of all, I think in the UK this stuff is a lot more commonplace than it is here in the United States, but I think it must have been eating at him, because I think it was 10 days later that he decided to show up. When the police got to his apartment, they said that they found his housemate on the kitchen floor who had been there for 10 days. So it obviously was eating at him, and his solution was going to get a tarot reading.
Imagine he's in jail with all these other murderers, and they're talking to each other. Well, how'd you get caught? Like, well, how'd you get caught? Well, I had a
psychic reading.
I had a tarot reading, and they pulled up the Death card, so I knew I had to confess. I wonder how that went over. Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe they all go.
Yeah, I don't know much about, you know, tarot. I know that most, you know, of the mediums don't use it, but some actually kind of use it as a focusing device.
It's quite interesting. Highly developed mediums obviously don't need it,
yeah.
And underdeveloped mediums will use it, like you just said, as to focus them so that they can get information. But then people who are just really pure tarot readers are just really reading the cards. They've learned what each of the symbols are, and they're just spitting back to you the cards that you pull out.
Right. All right, we're going to go to a break, because we're going to have our wonderful guest coming up after the break, so stay with us. We'll be back with Dr. Carlos Alvarado in a couple of minutes.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Wind Bridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions.
Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a WindBridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more. The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Carlos Alvarado. Our sponsor is the WindBridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at windbridge.org. Bob?
And Carlos Alvarado received his PhD in psychology from the University of Edinburgh. His research has been funded by many organizations, including the Parapsychology Foundation, the Society for Psychical Research, and the Bial Foundation. Carlos has taught parapsychology in many universities, including Sophia University, where he's currently an adjunct research faculty. He has an appointment as assistant professor of research at the University of Virginia in the Department of Psychiatry and Neurobehavioral Sciences. specifically adopts the division of perceptual studies. He served as the chairman of domestic and international programs at the Parapsychology Foundation from 2000 to 2008, volunteered occasionally from 2008 through 2014, and in January 2015 was named the foundation's first research fellow. He has conducted historical research and survey studies in the U.S., Scotland, and Puerto Rico, and he's done that solo and together with his wife, Dr. Nancy Zingroni, who was on the show a week or two ago. A website where you can learn more is the Azire, azire.org. Welcome, Carlos. Nice to have you with us again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Hello.
And, you know, we build you as a... as one of the world authorities in the history of mediumship, and I think that's certainly true. A good place to start, I mean, a lot of people are familiar with the mental mediums today. So how about the mediums in the past, 100 years ago? Were they predominantly mental mediums as well, or was physical mediumship more prevalent in those days?
Well, when spiritualism was starting here in the United States, kind of in the middle of the century, you know, the late 1840s, 1850s particularly, I think there were more physical mediums around than mental mediums. But that very soon started to change because people's main interest was in communication with members of their family and friends that had died. And they started asking questions to mediums. So I think that interest started a change from the physical manifestations to the more mental one. Although it should be stated that even from the beginning, the physical phenomena were also an instrument of communication. If people will go to a rapping medium like the Fox Sisters or so many others where sounds were heard on walls or on the top of a table, the interest was not only in the physical manifestation of a sound, of a rap. Their interest was in asking questions about who's there and if they identify a person, as it often happened, asking questions about if they were all right, what were they doing, if they had any advice, and so forth.
Yeah, so they would actually sometimes have a certain code, right, where they would rap a certain number of times to correspond with letters in the alphabet or use a something like a Ouija board, and that's the way these messages were interpreted?
Yeah, that's true. They will go through the alphabet. Sometimes there were yes and no questions, and that make it easy, you know, like one sound, one rap for yes, two for no. And
right.
The Ouija board also appear fairly early, as well as automatic writing. You know, the medium will grab a pencil and paper, and we start writing or drawing or doing all kinds of things in response to questions.
Yeah. So the physical mediums, the ones that were producing large amounts of the physical phenomena, the levitations and the raps, I mean, they would explain that, or would they explain that these raps were coming from discarnates, or did they claim that this was a result of their own psychic powers that could make these things happen?
Well, the mediums, or more accurately, the communicators, you know, the supposed spirits coming through the mediums, will say that they were the ones, the spirits were the ones that were causing the physical phenomena. But
right,
in order to be able to cause those phenomena, they needed a medium's energy. So they will use the medium's energy, which a lot of people define in different ways, as the nerve force or the vital force or their aura, and the spirits will manipulate that energy and cause raps or movements of objects, materialize figures such as hands, faces, and whole bodies. And sometimes the energy was said to come not only from the medium, but also from the seers, you know, the people that were present in the seance. So that was the general explanation that was given at the time by the spirits themselves and by spiritualists. there was another group of people that very early on argued that yes, there was a force on the body, but spirits were not involved, and there was a fight at that time in the 1850s. As it continues today, about what is the source of the manifestations? Is this a spirit, a discarnate entity, or is it the mind of the medium using their own psychic force and causing phenomena looking as if they were coming from spirits but really coming from the medium, him or herself?
Yeah, sometimes that same debate continues today. I mean,
it's really the same debate. It's only that in the old days it was more based on more physical ideas of force and ideas that were not that well developed. You know, today they talk more about psychic and more mental things such as ESP.
Yeah,
but it's the same conflict of ideas essentially.
Now, how did the term, in reading some of the old books and some of the old research papers, the term mesmerism comes up? What is meant by mesmerism?
Well, mesmerism is a movement that comes first from Europe, more particularly in France and Germany. There were a lot of developments. Franz Anton Mesmer was a man that developed, he was a physician, and he developed a system of healing. And his idea was, and he was not completely original, because before him there have been other people claiming the same thing. He claimed there was a physical universal force called animal magnetism. And by manipulating that energy, at first using magnets and later using his own hands, you know, doing passes over people's heads and over their body, that became known as magnetic passes. He was able to heal people and also to put them in a trance and induce all kinds of what we will call today psychic phenomena. Soon that spread all through Europe. It also came to the United States. It became a big movement, and the movement was called mesmerism, following the name of Mesmer.
Yeah. Well, I guess, especially when you can invoke these trance-like states, that's why the term today, people still say, I was mesmerized. I guess
that's
the same thing, right?
Yeah, no, that's true. And on all these ideas that I was talking about, forces on the medium and all that, they're very similar to animal magnetism that was even earlier, you know, that you started in the 18th century, before spiritualism had developed as a modern movement in the 1850s. But it's a similar idea. It's just that in spiritualism, instead of being a universal force, it was more a force related to the body of the medium and seers. But it's essentially the same concept. I must say that in mesmerism, before spiritualism, you also find the idea that some of the people that were mesmerized and were in trance, they will bring spirit communications through. So there was an element of spiritualism and of mediumship in the old mesmeric tradition, but it was kind of fairly small. Not all of them were doing that type of studies. That's why I think it has been forgotten that some of the mesmerized persons were also mediums.
Yeah, I think I recall you writing a paper on that, but with mesmeric mediumship. So I guess referring to that same thing, where some of the people that were practicing mesmerism were starting to do mediumship as well. Some of the mediums that you've written about and studied and researched are quite colorful, and I know that Eusapia Palladino, you know, comes up a lot, and I enjoy reading about her. So maybe just give us a little overview of who she was and how she was investigated.
Yeah, well, Eusapia Palladino was an Italian medium, was mainly a physical medium. Her phenomena were table levitations, movement of objects, materializations of hands, and even whole figures will appear, especially some of the reports that we have that come from Italy. She was a very influential medium, because when she started being investigated, and that happened in the 1890s, she she had seances with a lot of the main investigators, the main psychical researchers, as well as many of the spiritualists of her time. So you get people like Cesare Lombroso, who's just a very famous psychiatrist and criminologist in Italy, having seances with her. Lombroso was very famous, very well known in literature. The newspapers are always covering his ideas about criminals and about many other things, about mental illness. So at first he was skeptical, but then he has a seance around 1891, and he changes his mind. You know, he believes that he has seen real movement of objects, that the physical phenomena were not hallucinations, were not fraud. And all of a sudden, Palladino, the medium, becomes very famous in the scientific world because of Lombroso's endorsement. Soon after, many other people start investigating her from Italy, from France, from England. And she became extremely important in terms of providing evidence for physical phenomena, and also serve as a catalyst for the development of all kinds of instruments to study the physical phenomena, to measure what was happening, to demonstrate that people were not imagining that the table was moving or the object was moving, but that it was actually moving. There were instruments that will detect, kind of doing a tracing on paper, that someone was activating a key, you know, like a telegraphic key put on top of a table, and there will be a graphic record of that. That was one example. But the end result of that is that there were so many studies by a lot of scientists, many of which were convinced that that was extremely important, not only for spiritualism, but also for psychical research and for the development of actual techniques and explanations. These whole ideas of psychic forces that I mentioned before were even further developed to explain her mediumship. And she herself, you know, will communicate ideas about how that will work. So she was a big influence in the early study of physical mediumship. And I would say probably the first medium that was really investigated systematically by a large number of researchers. I think that's why she's so important.
Yeah. Well, is it true that at some point in her career, in these investigations, they discovered some fraud on her part?
Yes, that is true. From early on, she has found to commit fraud. Usually, you know, she was sitting on a round table and she was being held by one person on the right side and one by the other. And a common trick that she performed was that she will liberate one of her hands. This was done in darkness or semi-darkness. And sometimes people did not realize that she had done that. And with that hand, she will grab the table or throw an object. Or if it was in complete darkness, and some senses were complete darkness, she will go around with the hand and will touch people's faces. And, you know, when you're sitting like that in the dark, you don't know what's happening.
Right.
Several of these researchers were able to detect that fraud. The thing is that they assured us in their reports that they were familiar with the type of tricks that she performed. And usually they were very simple, things like what I just mentioned. And they took measures to control for that, and many of them were convinced that even when they were controlling for fraud, a real phenomena could happen. Also, sometimes some of the phenomena happen kind of at a distance. You know, so we have a very short but very interesting account coming from Lombroso, the psychiatrist, where he says that the seance had ended, and all of a sudden, everyone's attention went to the other side of a room, and they saw a table coming towards them. And the medium was far away, everyone was far away, and he said, you know, the table was kind of jumping, and he compared it to a small elephant, kind of very clumsily moving through the room. You know, there were a lot of incidents like that clearly cannot be explained with the simple tricks that she performed.
Yeah. Well, why is it that you think that somebody, as gifted as she was, and it was clear from all the investigations that she had some extraordinary ability, why would somebody like that occasionally resort to fraud? Is it just a matter of taking the easy way out, you know, because it's less work, or maybe she's not particularly fond of the people that are investigating her, or you know.
But there
were many
explanations similar to what you are mentioning.
Yeah.
That there were times that she could not perform for whatever reason. The phenomena were not happening, but she felt that she had to produce something because people will be disappointed. You know, many times she will be brought from the place in Italy where she lived, that she will be brought to France or to other parts of Italy. And she felt the pressure, so she will do all these things. But then there were other people that believed that she committed unconscious fraud. And her mediumship was also very important in the development of this idea that sometimes mediums, when they are in trance, they do not know what they are doing. And sometimes the phenomena happen being real by liberation of some force from their body. That was the idea. But sometimes if the conditions are not right and that force is blocked or cannot go out for whatever reason and nothing is going to happen, in the mind of the medium, the phenomena has to happen. And in an automatic way, she just extends her leg and leaves the table or uses her hand or does something without being aware of it. That concept is older than Palladino. We find that idea even in the 1870s in the records of other less known physical mediums.
Yeah.
But with Palladino, it got developed more. Then there is also the idea, and some people like Hugh R. Carrington, a famous researcher that believed that that Palladino was real, he believed that on occasion she also loved to mystify and to confound people, and that there were times that she just did it for the fun of it, and because, you know, you have to remember, Palladino had no education. She was basically a peasant, and a lot of the people that investigated her were from very high society. Even there were counts and barons and people like that, or all kinds of professors from different universities. And sometimes she had kind of a pleasure of doing things to all these wise, learned people, you know. So that's another possible explanation of why, you know, she was doing those things.
Yeah, that all makes sense. You know, we mentioned all the phenomena that very often took place in darkness, but you know, I clearly read reports from physical mediums that produced all this physical phenomena in either in well lit rooms or in broad daylight, and a lot of the physical mediums even today claim that it has to be total darkness because it could be harmful to them physically if a light were to come on. So I never could justify, how the mediums of the past could do it in daylight, and today the explanation is that it can't be. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yes, well, I think there is a great variety of mediums in terms of their ability to perform in light. Certainly there is a long tradition of the bad effects of light, especially with materialization phenomena. But there were many mediums like Didi Hume, for example, that performed in very good conditions of illumination. And even Palladino herself, she was not always in darkness or semi-darkness. There are many reports that in which the perception of the room, you know, was fairly clear, and they could see what was going on. So it is hard to say what is the issue there. It seems to me, as some people like Schrenk Notzing, that was a physician from Germany that investigated materialization and other psychic phenomena with mediums, he believed that it was a question of training the mediums. That all physical mediums have this capacity, more or less developed, of projecting energy to move objects, to materialize forms. But that because of early training or their beliefs, they have got used to be in darkness. And he says that's not necessary. But since they were trained like that, you know, you have to go with that, because if not, they could not produce anything. But it was not that the light itself was that important. So he was trying always to put forward the idea that if you train the medium and slowly go with them, that eventually they can produce things in better light. Because there are also many other reports that suggest that light could be harmful or interfere with the phenomena. So, you know, we're not completely sure of what is the answer to that. But the thing is that it is on record that there have been many mediums that can perform in fairly good light or almost perfect illumination. So, right. You know, you would like to see the modern mediums that ask for light to perhaps start trying to sit and have seances following different procedures.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. We are talking with Dr. Carlos Alvarado. You can learn more about the work that he does by visiting azire.org. Mediumship is just one avenue of research. There are so many. There's a list of all the papers that he has written. We're going to go to a break now. We're going to come back in a couple of minutes, so stay with us.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
Hello, my name is Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death. Heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word, .com.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Yeah.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Carlos Alvarado. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at winbridge.org. We want to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website regularly for all events and announcements. That's www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Just to let our listeners know what else they might be missing this coming weekend, Saturday, June 11th at 2 p.m., we have the Visionary Explorers Group. That's free. It meets online. And our Afterlife Discussion Group in Miami, Florida, is making its debut return with a brand new facilitator, Joan. So Joan will be there to greet everybody in Miami who's free on Saturday at 2 p.m. Drop in, say hello to Joan. We had a super webinar last week on induced after-death communication with Dr. Alan Botkin. There will be no scheduled webinar for July, but you can sign up already for the August webinar with Dr. Claude Swanson. New Science Helps Explain the Afterlife. Where is Heaven? There are still spots available for our annual July grief retreat, where only 50 guests come to spend a weekend in a beautiful and peaceful setting with like-minded people, all learning that our loved ones are still with us. The weekend is all-inclusive and features spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Joe Shields, Janet Nohavik, and Joe Peretta, working alongside our other professionals and facilitators. It also includes a variety of activities and small breakout workshops, all designed to heal and create special experiences for everyone in attendance. People have attended this yearly event from all around the globe, and many return year after year because we always try and plan a new and exciting program. But please be sure, before making your reservations, if you plan on attending, we do maintain a no-refund policy. And as a reminder, 38 of the 50 spots have been taken, mostly by attendees seeking single rooms. So we're out of on-site rooms, but there are links on the website for nearby hotels. And if you are planning on coming, then you would sign up for the commuter rate, which would not include the costs of staying on site. Our first annual mediumship convention is all set for the weekend of November 11th through 13th. And again, like our grief retreat, we are enjoying an early round of reservations. Like our original Afterlife Conference, this is another first of its kind, a convention totally dedicated to the world of mediumship, run by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, taught by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, and spirit communication conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums. Reservations can be made on our website, and as always, keep in mind our no-refund policy before making your reservations. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donate button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can help us pay our bills also by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Great Nonprofits, and WellZoo, and visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org for all events, links, information, and registration. Lastly, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, contact us via email at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. I'm done. Back to you, Bob.
We're back with Dr. Carlos Alvarado. The website is theazire.org. You know, Carlos, I mean, you're so well-versed in so many different topics, and I didn't mean to monopolize the whole time on mediumship, but there are some terms I come across mostly from your writings that are interesting. One term was with traveling clairvoyance. Is traveling clairvoyance the same as what we now refer to as remote viewing, or is that something different?
Well, it's kind of similar to remote viewing. But in traveling clairvoyance is the idea that it developed in the old mesmeric literature that we were mentioning before. Yeah. That when someone is in trance, the mesmerizer basically will tell the person in trance, I want you to travel to a specific location. And that, you know, is kind of similar to remote viewing. In the old records, there were times that the experience was described similar to an out-of-body experience in which the person felt that They were kind of floating and traveling and arriving to a place. Or there were times that they had no sensation of movement at all, no traveling to any place, but they will open their eyes and they will find themselves in another location. They will describe the location, some place that was unknown to them. And there are many, many records of these things in which the description was accurate. You know, they could describe houses, places, and all kinds of things, or even the action of people. You know, people that were doing some specific things, they later found out that at that specific time that was happening. So in some ways, it's very similar to remote viewing. I cannot say, you know, if it was exactly the same thing, but I think a lot of these experiences shade into each other.
Yeah.
So sometimes they look like an out-of-body traveling, sometimes not. Sometimes it's like ESP or clairvoyance from your physical location. And it's hard to say, you know, what if they're all the same thing or not. I tend to think they're very related. It's just that they manifest in different ways according to the person.
How did the mediums, especially from a while back, did they talk about life on other planets? I mean, I recall reading that some of the mediums had their guides describe traveling to other planets. Is that something that you addressed?
Yeah, recently wrote a very short note about that. There is a long tradition of descriptions of that sort. The planet Mars and Jupiter were two big favorites. You know, the people that said that they will travel there, they're sometimes guided by their own spirit guide, or they just receive communications describing life in other places. Some of the communications are a little incredible, you know, because they're about things that should have been discovered now, you know, with the better observations that we have of other planets, the descriptions of certain buildings, and not only buildings, but, you know, some of the descriptions are very complex about societies, you know, the men and women and the types of things they do, what they eat, what they do, a whole description of life in the planets. And sometimes I find that a little too much, and it looks like it's a little more a creation of the mind of the medium. But other times, you know, you cannot be sure. Certainly, I don't think any of them are lying in any way. But there are many descriptions of these things over the years. And it's just that they're not featured too much in the psychical research literature because, you know, they're assumed to be what psychical researchers will call non-veridical, meaning that there are things that you cannot check. You know, you cannot do anything to check to see if the person was really in Mars or in whatever planet, and you cannot check what's happening in those places. And
right.
I think that has not encouraged investigation.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, out-of-body experiences, and I know, you know, it's something that you've studied extensively. A lot of people claim that they go out of body when they're dreaming or they're unconscious or they're meditating or lying down. And then there are others that describe going out of body when they're engaged in intense physical activity or sport or running.
Yes.
Is one more conducive to having an OBE than the other?
I think that those states in that of passivity, you know, lying down or being unconscious, where your body is not doing much, I think that's more conducive, if only because, you know, the experiences that happen like that are much more frequent than the ones that take place when the physical body is active. You know, when you are driving a car, a bicycle, where you're standing in group in front of a group and you are delivering a sermon or some type of lecture, playing the piano, running, like a case that I have from Scotland of a woman that was practicing to run in a marathon, and she's just running and running, and all of a sudden her consciousness is up there looking down and seeing herself running without having, you know, any problem. And usually those experiences are really brief. But they're much less frequent. You know, the ones with physical activity are, don't know, yeah, they're kind of less than 20%, probably around 10%. They're not really systematic studies, you know, doing checking for these, but they're not that frequent. I recently was trying to compile some of the published cases over the years, you know, from the 19th century to more recent. And I found, like, I don't know, like 25 cases, and then I reported like four more that I found myself. So you can find cases, but they are not that frequent. That's why I think, and there is a long tradition of speculation of people writing that the idea that a spirit can leave the body is happens mainly when you are in a very passive state, because that facilitates the actual separation.
Yeah. When I read back around the time of the Fox sisters, and I sometimes I'm amazed at just how popular mediumship was. I mean, it was wildly popular. It took over cities and you know, thousands and tens of thousands of people would come out to see the medium. So, I mean, as a society, do you think that we're more or less open to mediumship today than we were, you know, 150 years ago?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think it's hard to answer because now, you know, we have, with all the media that we have, the TV, and now especially with internet and other forms of communication, there is so much about mediumship out there. But I still tend to think that in the early days, the thing was even more widely spread, even through the channels of communication for news were less efficient than today. I think there were many more mediums out there, and they were trying to do all kinds of things in, you know, not only communication, but there were all kinds of healing mediums and mediums to produce art and many, many other things. My impression is that there was more in the old days, but that doesn't mean that it has disappeared, as you well know, you know, today. It's just a change, I will say.
Yeah, I think that, like you said, it's just different. You know, people, then they had to congregate in physical places, and they didn't have the distractions, and it was a form of entertainment and the center of activity, and it's just different. There's a tremendous interest today. So it is hard to measure. But I think you may be right. I think it might have been even more, popular, 150 years ago, as hard as that is for a lot of listeners to believe, you know, that it is now. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I think as our listeners can gather, Carlos Alvarado is, we like to call him the human encyclopedia, because his knowledge is so vast on these subjects. So, Carlos also writes a blog, and you can learn more about his work and the work of Nancy Zangroni by going to theazire.org. Carlos, thanks so much for joining us again tonight, and we hope to
My
talk
pleasure.
To you. Thank you. Have a good
Thank
evening.
You. Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Karen Gould, Stanley Mullen, Glenna Irwin, Michael Tim, David Haith, Marianne Pierzga, Donna Mello, Matt Mello, Fred Feinstein, James Rafferty, Doreen Malloy, Diane Archangel, Joan Lipke, Irma Marshan, Vince Mattia, Joanne Gerber. And now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.